Chapter 14. On the Pasha. The day that Jed had arrived in Antigua had been the worst day of her life. At the airport, Corcoran had put his hand under her arm and led her to the car. He sat in front and she sat between the two blonde bodyguards in the back. And when she had stepped onto the Pasha, the three men had stood around her as she was taken to Roper's office. Roper was sitting at his desk with his back to her. He was reading something and marking it with a pen. He did not turn or say hello, but continued reading. She sat down and waited nervously. "Is he going to hit me?" she thought.
"I hear you've been having some fun with Thomas," Roper said, finally, without turning. "You should know that his real name is Pine. Jonathan to you."
"Where is he?" she asked.
"I thought you'd ask that," answered Roper. He turned a page. "Have you been with him long? You were very good at keeping it secret, even with all those people around. I'm not stupid, but I didn't see it."
"If they're telling you that I've been sleeping with Jonathan, it's not true," she said quietly. "But yes, I do love him. Is he on the boat?"
Roper did not move. "Pine said he did it all himself. Is that true? He said you didn't do any of it."
"Do any of what?" she asked.
Roper stood up then, but still he did not look at her.
"What are you doing to him?" she said. "Let him go."
Roper turned and walked towards her. He stared at her with cold eyes and said, "I've thought a lot about you, Jed."
"Are she and Pine doing this together?" I thought. "Corcoran thinks they are."
"Is that why I found you at the horse sale? It wasn't just chance." He touched her face with his hand and his eyes smiled at her.
"I don't know what you're talking about," she said. "You were good to me and I loved you. You know I did."
"Do you know a man called Burr?" he asked.
"No, I don't know him," she replied.
"That's funny. Neither does Pine."
They dressed for dinner then, and their strange nights and days together on the Pasha began. They talked about ordinary things in the day, and at night she still slept in his bed. She was always waiting for the moment that he would turn against her, and at the same time, she knew that she was buying time for Jonathan. The Pasha left Antigua and sailed towards Curaçao. On it were Richard Roper and his guests. They included Lord Langbourne and his wife Caroline, Major Corcoran and Jed. There were 16 other very rich men and women with them, who were there to eat and drink and do deals with Roper. But Jonathan was not with them. He was lying below in the Pasha's dark and bloody hold, with chains around his arms and legs. Most of the time he was alone, but sometimes Corcoran came with Tabby and Frisky to bruise his face and body even more. Jed knew where Jonathan was now. She often saw staff from the boat go down some steps into the hold with food. She noticed who visited him and when. It was usually Frisky, Tabby or Corcoran going in twice a day.
"Please, Corky," she said, "tell me how he is. Is he ill? Does he know that I'm on the boat?"
But Corcoran did not tell her anything. Sometimes Langbourne visited him too, usually in the evening after dinner. And she knew that Roper also went there because he was quiet when he came back from that part of the boat. But Jed knew better than to cry or shout. Roper did not like women crying. After Roper's first visit, Jonathan had decided not to talk to them at all. He had told Roper that Jed had not helped him, and since then he had said nothing more, not even good morning or hello. He did not want to tell Roper anything about Burr and Rook and the messages he had sent to them. But what more did Roper want to find out? He knew that Jonathan was an agent and that the stories about his past were not true. He knew enough to change or stop his plans before it was too late. So why was Roper determined to make him talk? Because now, Jonathan decided, he was Roper's agent. Roper had discovered what he really was, and he needed to control him and, of course, to punish him. But none of them knew about Sophie. She was there with him every day, speaking to him, making him laugh, telling him to live. While Tabby and Frisky punched his body and he felt terrible pain, Sophie told him how her body had been broken too. And, of course, she told him to stay silent. And as the questions continued, Jonathan saw that Roper sometimes came to watch again. "They will kill you, Pine," he said. "Tell them before it's too late." Then something amazing happened. There was a telephone call for Roper in the early evening from Sir Anthony Bradshaw. Roper turned away from Jed to pick up the phone next to the bed, and she saw his back go still. "Anthony, are you crazy?" he said. Then there was a long silence before Roper shouted at her. "Go and have a bath. Close the door and turn on the water. Do it now." A few minutes later, he stood by the bathroom door. "You need to get dressed," he said. "Corcoran will be here in 2 minutes." Frisky and Tabby came for Jonathan at the same time. He thought that this was the end and that they had finally come to kill him. So when the two bodyguards opened the door and took off his chains, he was ready for them. "We've had enough of you, Thomas," said Tabby. "So now you're going on a journey." They carried him up from the bottom of the boat and he looked up at the stars. He looked down at the water and he could see land nearby. There were house lights and cars on a road. Then he saw Roper wearing a white jacket and trousers. Corcoran was there too, and between them he could see Jed. Jonathan suddenly took both Tabby and Frisky's heads and hit them together very hard. The men screamed and fell to the ground. Corcoran lifted his gun and Roper said, "That was a very stupid thing to do, Pine."
"Jonathan, look!" Jed shouted.
Jonathan looked away from Corcoran's gun and at the same time heard Roper slowly counting. Then he saw that Roper was holding a gun to Jed's head. Jonathan knew he could do nothing to help her. He was very tired, and his body felt broken as he fell down on the deck. This time, he heard Jed and Sophie together shouting at him to stay awake. When he woke up, they were pulling him to the side of the ship. Corcoran made Jed go first, and then they helped Jonathan down the steps and lifted him into the small boat after her. Jed looked up and saw Roper in his white jacket staring down at her as if he was looking for something he had lost. For a moment, he looked like she remembered him in Paris, a nicely dressed, charming Englishman. Then he moved back from the side of the ship and disappeared. It was two brothers who noticed the light in the cottage first as they drove past Lanyon Head one night on the way home from their fishing boat. Who's living in Jack Lyndon's place now? One asked.
Perhaps Jack is back, replied the other.
They did not speak about it again until a week later, when they were standing by the sea and saw smoke coming from the cottage. A man with a big beard came out of the front door. It was Jack, they agreed.
More beard than hair, they joked.
But when they told Mrs. Trethewey that Jack had come back to Cornwall, she just laughed.
He's no more Jack Lyndon than I am, she said. That's a man from Ireland with his girlfriend. They're going to keep horses there and paint pictures. They've bought the cottage. Yes, he looks a bit like Jack, I agree, but I've had the police here. A nice man called Burr came all the way from London and spoke to us about him, and it's fine. So please don't talk badly again of what's happening in that house, because if you do, you'll hurt two very good people.
Penguin Readers, The Night Manager, John le Carré, Level 5. Retold by Anna Truin. Illustrated by Kevin Hopgood. Series editor Sorrel Pitts. Read by Nigel Pilkington. Copyright Penguin Books Limited, 2020.